Welcome to this crossover edition of Locked On Pistons and Locked On Celtics. I'm Dan Feldman from Locked On Pistons.
And I'm Jay King from Locked On Celtics.
These two longtime rivals, I think they're maybe positioned to get that going again, two up-and-comers in the Eastern Conference. I think the Celtics are ahead of the Pistons, definitely based on what they did last year. And then for the long term, the Celtics have all these draft picks, a couple from the Nets, a couple from other deals. They've got cap flexibility. They've got a deep, talented roster. And, oh, now they have Al Horford. Is there any reason any other team, including the Pistons in the East, should have any feeling of like, hey, we could be the next team after LeBron is declining a little bit? Or do the Celtics just have that completely on lock?
I think the Raptors are in the conversation. I think the Pistons, to me, are one of those teams that, like, how close are they? I'm not completely sure. I'm not sold on them. I'm not like if Andre Drummond is a beast and Reggie Jackson continues his progression and Stan Van Gundy remains Stan Van Gundy, they could be right there. But the Celtics are good, man, and they're going to be good for a long time. Like they're just set up of all the teams maybe in the NBA. No, I mean, you think about the Timberwolves and stuff like that. Those guys have such a loaded core. But the Celtics, they're loaded with young talent. They have cap space. They have lottery picks coming up from the Nets. Like, they're just in such a good place. And with Al Horford on the team, he's such a big upgrade on both ends of the court. I think they could approach like somewhere in the vicinity of 53 to 55 wins this year. So if the Pistons want to get to that level, then they're going to have to be pretty good.
Yeah, I think you are dead on the Celtics, and that's what's frustrating for the Pistons is, okay, the Pistons have that first up. They have that what I think is a pretty talented young roster, but it's not quite as good as the Celtics. And then the Celtics have the cap space and the draft picks coming on top of it, where I don't know how you keep up.
Yeah, and the Pistons, it's kind of cool to me how Stan Van Gundy has gone about building that roster. Like, he has a vision for his team, and he just wants guys to fit that vision. Is that right to think about it like that?
Yeah, I think so. And he's done a good job of identifying them early. I think if there's anywhere the Pistons can have a leg up over the Celtics, it's their continuity. That, you know, they don't have it yet, but they've locked into a group, and they're going to have a chance to grow together. And I think if you look at a team, the comparison I keep making is to the Trailblazers. When they had LaMarcus Aldridge, so when they had Damian Lillard and Nicholas Batum and Robin Lopez around him and Wesley Matthews, that team had played together a little bit, and I think they had gotten so comfortable together. Yes, they were very talented. That helped a lot too, but their comfort level put them over the edge with some talented teams. Now, they just never happened to crack through in a very good Western Conference, but they were definitely good enough at times. And so I think the Celtics are going to be a little more fluid, and correct me if you think otherwise, but just by nature of having this cap space, having these draft picks, having a general manager who's always looking for the next star, I don't know when they lock in, and maybe there's a window where the Pistons, where the Cavs have declined because LeBron's gotten a little older, where the Celtics are still juggling all their assets, and maybe that's the Pistons' window to do something.
Yeah, so the Celtics are in a kind of a, not a weird place, but in that Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart will all be up for bigger contracts in 2 years. So it's like you have kind of this window, and it's not like an expiration date because you can still choose to go in whatever direction. But there is that time, and there's kind of like this pressure. And that's why building an NBA team is so hard. Like, there's always that next deadline where all this space that you have and all these great contracts that you have stop being great contracts. So there is kind of that line in the vicinity, on the horizon, where at some point they're going to have to make a decision. Okay, do we go ahead with this core? And I think if they sign or acquire another big star, whether it's Blake Griffin in free agency next year or DeMarcus Cousins, Jimmy Butler in a trade, whoever it might be. I'm just throwing names out there. If they get a guy like that, I think they'll lock in their core and they'll be willing to pay whatever for it. But if they don't, like, maybe you decide to pivot and go younger, and maybe you decide, okay, let's build around Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown. Let's say Jaylen Brown, he looks like a star, or whoever's the pick from the Nets next year looks like a star. Like, you could pivot in a different direction, and all of a sudden the team, the future looks very different than we think it will probably look like right now. Ooh. So there's like a lot of decisions going on. I don't know. They're in a great place, but they're also going to have some decisions to make in a couple of years.
What do you think about Jaylen Brown? Because you want to talk about the Celtics adding what I'd say is another star, because I think Al Horford is one. And, you know, you could argue Isaiah Thomas, and I think you could even argue Jay Crowder, depending on how loose your definition of a star is. But Jaylen Brown, so much talent. What did you think of him? What did you think of that draft pick? I think it's a real high variance situation.
Yeah, definitely high variance. This is a good way to talk about it. Someone asked me recently who I would compare him to. And I spent like hours thinking of guys I would compare Jaylen Brown to. And I thought of like all the possibilities from like I even threw out Dominique Wilkins, which is absurd, but he has like that kind of explosive athleticism. He said Tracy McGrady about himself, which is also absurd. The ball skills, the shooting, that would take a long time to develop. But it's like he has that athleticism, and he also has a lot of flaws in his game. So does he ever get there? I don't know. The Celtics are putting faith in his work ethic. And right now everybody says, you know, he has the right mentality. He wants to grow. And a guy with that athleticism, if he does want to grow and if he's receptive to coaching, then you can kind of mold him. But you will have to mold him. The thing about Jaylen Brown is he really wasn't all that good in college. No. he didn't shoot well. He didn't finish well. He didn't even get a lot of steals and blocks, which is weird because he can fly. So, like, what does he become? I have no idea. So the comparison question, like, I was thinking of the spectrum of guys that I could have compared him to was, like, from Hall of Famers to, like, just regular players, like bench guys. So I have no idea, and it'll be fun to see. And he definitely does some stuff that you're like, whoa. I mean, in Summer League, he made some moves that were just stupid. Like, he up-faked Pat Connaughton, flew by, and then one dribble, huge dunk on everyone's head. And those are the moments that make you think he could be special. But as the Celtics fans have seen with guys like Jeff Green, like, moments of specialness don't mean you're a great player. You need to put those together, and he's got a lot of work to do to become a great player. I have a question. This is something that I always wonder. Actually, not always, but the last couple of years I've wondered. How good is Reggie Jackson?
Oh, boy. Yeah. I guess that's a little easier to answer than how good is Jaylen Brown. I think that was I gave you the hardest one to figure on either team. Maybe
how
even
good
in the
this
league.
Guy who's never played a game.
who scouts disagree wildly on. I think Reggie Jackson is pretty good in an era where there are a lot of really good point guards. I'm not even sure he's an above average point guard, but I think that speaks more to the depth at the position. An above average starting point guard, I should clarify. But I think that just says more about all the guys out there. You know, Reggie Jackson was getting was really put in the same level as Isaiah Thomas around the All-Star break. Because Reggie Jackson had a really good first half, and it was to the point where there was a discussion about, like, which of those two, or maybe Kemba Walker, like, who should be an all-star.
Yeah, they were all kind of close at that point.
And then Isaiah Thomas and Kemba Walker kept it up in the second half. Reggie Jackson just happened to be better in the first half than the second half of the season. Slipped off a little bit to the point where, you know, he wasn't quite in that discussion. And I think that's a big part of the next step for him is, and I don't know if it's a conditioning thing exactly, but I think it might be, being able to sustain his good bursts over a longer stretch. He made nice progress as a shooter last year. I think that's sustainable. I think he can even become a little better as an outside shooter. His stroke looks pretty good. Running the pick and roll with Andre Drummond is going to help get you some looks. And you know, because I think teams will sometimes have to go under because of Drummond. And because of the threat of the Pistons, other shooters, especially when they're hot, their ability to spread the floor, especially from the four position. So I think he's still on an upward track. Kevin Pelton's done a lot of great research on this from ESPN about how point guards more than any position tend to develop late. And I can definitely see that in Reggie Jackson as his floor vision is steadily getting better. The big micro thing for him is going to be defense. And I think this relates to the bigger thing of conditioning, and maybe he had to save himself a little bit. The Pistons put a ton on his plate. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, while I think is a good player, is one of the worst playmaking shooting guards, starting shooting guards in the league. Not much of a passer, only limited, sort of as a straight line dribbler. So he's not really helping out there. Neither is Marcus Morris as a forward. Tobias Harris can do a little more. They just acquired him midseason. So it's a lot on Reggie Jackson's plate, and he's got to find a way to put some of that energy into defense, because last year it was a problem. When he can't fight through those ball screens at all and disrupt at all, it just really opened things up for opposing offenses.
Yeah, so that's another question I have that kind of led me into this question. Stan Van Gundy, obviously he wants to have a stretch four next to Drummond, and he wants to center everything around the pick and roll. Do the Pistons have not enough secondary playmakers around Reggie Jackson? Like they need more guys who can create, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a massive problem, because, in the scope of the other problems the Pistons have had over the last few years, like, this is very small potatoes. But I think that's like what led to them drafting Michael Binaget out of Syracuse, more of a guy who played point guard in college and projects to be a shooting guard in the NBA. Like, I just don't think he's good enough to play and last in the NBA. Although, he's a rookie, he'll have a chance. Like, I wouldn't say it's inconceivable, but I think they are a little desperate for that. And maybe Stanley Johnson can develop into it. Stanley Johnson, sort of the Pistons version of Jaylen Brown, not nearly as extreme, not as much upside, and probably is further along at this point, but a player who's very raw but has a lot of talent and could put it together. So I think the hope is Stanley Johnson develops into that. I wouldn't expect it this year, though.
Yeah, yeah. When I look at that team, it's like striking how little secondary playmaking they have, and that when Reggie Jackson pops it out, it's like there's just not a lot of other guys who can really create off the bounce. And the Celtics kind of have that issue too, especially with Evan Turner gone now. For as many flaws as he had, especially with shooting, he really helped them, and especially when Isaiah Thomas wasn't on the court, they relied on him a lot. So the things you said about from Kevin Pelton's research about point guards developing late, the Celtics are hoping that Marcus Smart is another guy like that, and that he can put it together and start to really make plays for himself and others and really learn how to shoot. He was such a bad shooter from everywhere on the court last year and really for most of the year before. So he needs to take a big step for them if they're going to reach their full potential.
Smart's weird, because I think coming out of college, as a rookie, he didn't shoot that bad. And maybe it was just a small sample size, and the second year showed what he truly was and what we all expected him to be. But coming to the league, I did, at least. I think a lot of people expected him to be better as a lead guard, as a distributor.
Yeah, yeah. And in his defense, he hasn't really had too many opportunities. Like, he came to a team where they had, first they had Rajon Rondo, and then Isaiah Thomas came over, and then it was Thomas and Evan Turner. So he hasn't really had too many opportunities to run the show. And I think this year he'll finally get that opportunity, and we'll see more what he can do as a point guard. He made strides as a passer last season, and he had stretches where it was like he looked really good controlling things in the pick and roll, but it was just stretches, and he's going to have to be a threat to score himself. He is going to have to do that more routinely, because they're going to need it from him with Turner gone.
Marcus Smart just really infuriated me last year, because I loved watching him defend as a rookie. Like, he got flopping into guys, and then he just started flopping like crazy last year.
It got to the point where it was almost comical. Like the Kyle Korver flop, was maybe the greatest flop of all time. That was, he almost hurt himself. Flop. Like I want him to go either one of two ways, either cut out the flopping or just make it even more ridiculous. Like
just go full like, heel turn.
Yeah. Like he's gotta be throwing himself into the front row, like hurting fans, hurting himself with flops, or he's got to just cut it out. Cause I do think referees noticed that. And, and he did not get the benefit of calls last year.
He didn't deserve it.
He definitely didn't. And it's funny. It's like he can't control it, man. He's like addicted to flopping. Like he just has this addiction. He's got to cut it out though. He definitely does.
So flipping the script to a player that I think both fan bases really like, Jonas Jerebko, big fan favorite in Detroit. I was a little disappointed they made that silly trade for Tayshaun Prince to give him up.
The GG trade.
Yeah, GG too. I don't know how many Pistons fans realize, like, because he barely played for Detroit. He wasn't that good when he got in. Like, how much Celtics fans just really liked him because he got hot in the right moments. But for Jonas, what should be expected of him next year? Is there going to be a place for him on this very deep team? Is he going to get into the rotation?
Oh, yeah. I think, the last two playoffs, it's like, this is the Jonas Jerebko cycle. He starts off and he's like on the fringe of the rotation, not really playing a huge role. He works himself into a bigger role. And then come playoffs, it's like game three and the Celtics decide, damn it, we need to start Jonas Jerebko. That's just what happens. He's invaluable because he's very valuable because he can guard fours. He can switch onto ones. Like he shoots threes. He hustles. He does so many things that help a team win. And I think the Celtics they don't have as many traditional big guys as they did last year when they started off with like Amir Johnson, Jared Sullinger, Tyler Zeller, David Lee. Who else do they have? Like they had five or six traditional big guys last year, Kelly Olynyk. And there was all big guys, and they try to play Jerebko at the three, and that just did not work. He's a four. He's best as a stretch four. And once he became a stretch four, he's good. And I think they have that vision this year. I think from day one, he'll be the power forward for bench lineups, and they'll go small or smallish, I think, with a lot of shooting on the court with either Kelly Olynyk at the four, Jonas Jerebko at the four, and try to spread the court. Last year, they didn't have enough shooting, and Jerebko helps you with shooting. He does a lot of other things. So I would say this year, like, he has a solid, solid spot from day one.
Well, so you hit on something, and to bring up an old wound for the Pistons, that Jerebko, Datome, Tayshaun Prince trade, my big case at the time was, yes, Jonas Jerebko's best position is power forward. I'm with you there. But even as a small forward, he was better than a 34-year-old Tayshaun Prince. Because I think the Pistons made that trade. It was after the Reggie Jackson trade where they gave up Kyle Singler. And they said, we need another small forward. And so they wanted Prince. As low as you were on Jerebko at small forward, and so you got to see a little bit of Prince that year in Boston. Not much in between deals from Memphis and then to Detroit. But who just out of curiosity, who would you have had as the better small forward then?
I mean, it was close. So I would probably go with Jerebko, but Prince wasn't bad for the Celtics. I mean, he was only there for like a month. It's really
he did
funny.
Have a nice little stretch there.
Because Brad Stevens to this day will rave about Tayshaun Prince's like 17 games with the Celtics or whatever it was. And there was one game where they played Tayshaun somewhere else and Brad credited him for helping to change the culture. He was there for literally like 3 weeks. And Brad was like, this guy just set an example of a perfect pro. Like we owe a lot to Tayshaun Prince. And it's like, Brad, relax, man. Like he was a decent eighth or ninth man.
This memory I have is always when the year the Pistons won the championship, they traded for Rasheed Wallace at midseason. But what a lot of people forgot is the Hawks traded for Rasheed Wallace first. They traded for him. He played one game with the Hawks, getting him from the Trailblazers, and then they flipped him to Detroit. And for years after that, whenever the Pistons would play Atlanta, like, Hawks players and coaches would do interviews just raving about, like, Rasheed Wallace. One game!
I love it, man. Like, those guys... I'm telling you, like, Brad Stevens does not rave about anyone like he raves about Tayshaun Prince. And the guy was in... And first of all, Tayshaun almost never reported to the Celtics. Like, he was right. unhappy at first. He didn't go to them for, like, 2 weeks. He stayed home. And then he just is a Brad Stevens favorite. He's a Brad Stevens type of guy. Hilarious.
Yeah, Pistons know all too well about when Tayshaun gets a little grumpy about things. The other guy I wanted to ask you about is James Young, who grew up in Flint, Michigan, went to high school in Rochester, Michigan. Like, you know, people here still follow him, still want to see him do well. How would you handicap his odds of making the regular season roster?
Low odds. I think right now, you know, they have 16 guys with guaranteed contracts, and what's really tough for them is they have so many first round draft picks, second round draft picks, that it's kind of like they're cannibalizing each other. Like RJ Hunter, it would have been nice if he could have played last year, but there was just too much depth and you didn't really get a chance to see what he could do. James Young has kind of been in that boat too. And granted, he hasn't shown much development, even when he's at summer league. Like, that guy, he got benched in a summer league game. And the coach was very open about it. Like, he just wasn't playing well enough for me to keep him on the court in a summer league game. And that doesn't bode well for his chances of making the team. With 16 guaranteed guys, it seems like RJ Hunter and James Young will be fighting for that 15th roster spot. And I think because Hunter is a year younger and has shown really more NBA potential than Young so far, he has to be the heavy favorite entering training camp.
Yeah, that's probably how I see it too. It's not like James Young is way too good of a player, or at least too valuable, maybe not too good, but because of his age, because of his talent, like, too valuable just to waive on a guaranteed salary. But that's where the Celtics are.
Yeah, it's just like, it's either going to be Young or Hunter. And, you know, Hunter was literally 28th pick last year. James Young was 17th pick the year before. So it's kind of crazy that's where they are. But they just have so much depth. Like, Tyler Zeller, solid big man. Like, he would be in so many rotations. He's probably their sixth big guy right now. And he hardly played at all last season. So they just have a lot of quality depth. And after signing Gerald Green, it looks like Young and Hunter are really, you know, fighting for that spot.
Do you think that if the Celtics are saying, okay, James Young, he's not going to make the team, do you think they could just give him away in a trade to a team with a little cap space left and a roster opening? Like, do you think they could find somebody who would just say, yeah, we'll take the last year of his salary?
Maybe. The thing about him is he hasn't shown – like, any NBA potential. Like, he had one game his rookie year, I think it was against the Hornets, where he had like 13 points. He looked really good. Other than that, he hasn't shown he can do really anything at an NBA level. Like, spot up shooting, maybe, but anything else, it's just like not there. He hasn't developed the awareness. He's not a good cutter. He doesn't know how to find his shots. He, like, the one thing I would say the most intriguing trait he has is that he can guard point guards. Like, they had him guard Ish Smith for a little while when Smith was with, I believe, the Pelicans. Like, they have him guard quick point guards, and he does a pretty good job. And that's like his one NBA level trait, I would say. So that's, he needs more, and he definitely needs to develop. Okay. What is it? 6 months after the Tobias Harris trade, how would you grade that?
A plus. Yeah. I mean, how do you get a young, talented, productive player on a reasonable contract for basically nothing? Like, Brandon Jennings walked away at the end of the year after helping the Magic do nothing. I guess Ilyasova was just included in the Oladipo trade for cap purposes. I doubt he had much value, even if he might play with the Thunder. Like, he's a pretty value neutral, maybe slightly value positive player. And much older. I mean, Tobias Harris, like, You got him for nothing. You got Marcus Morris for nothing. And that's how the Pistons have turned it around so quickly, is you get a couple starters for just basically nothing. And that makes the difference. Like, where the Celtics have all these assets and all these advantages, and I don't think need to get lucky, the Pistons got, I don't know if it's lucky, because they scouted it out. They were willing to do it. They were on top of it. But they were in the right place, having cap space at the right time.
Yeah, okay. And what do you think about the Henry Ellenson draft pick?
I liked it. I had him much higher on my board than they took him.
I think everybody did, yeah.
Yeah, I had him about 12, I think. I don't think he's guaranteed to even become a viable NBA player, but when you're at that point in the draft, like, there are no guarantees with that. He's a weird player because I think his future is as a playmaking five, as somebody who can be a center, who can rebound and go up court.
Mehmet Okur.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I like that comparison. Not much rim protection. But here's the difference. Mehmet was a better rebounder, especially in his early days, maybe late Mehmet Okur when his rebounding slipped. But still a solid player. But it's hard to work with that, because teams are used to having a center who can block shots, a center who gets rebounds. I don't think he'll ever be quick enough. Maybe it's possible, but I think it's easier for him to get stronger and guard centers than to get faster and guard power forwards. And at the center, that could be just a real weapon, somebody who can stretch the floor and pass and dribble, because teams aren't used to that either. So it can cut both ways.
Yep. Yeah, Ellenson, he's interesting to me. I'm intrigued by Henry Ellenson. He's another guy, like you said, I don't know if he'll pan out, but he has a lot of skills. So skilled guys, it's always nice to have skilled guys.
So I wanted to get back to big picture before we close it up. I think maybe not. I know you're very high in the Celtics, and I am too, but I'm guessing you would have the Cavs as the Eastern Conference favorites this year.
Maybe everybody does, right? Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I just want to make sure you're not an exception here.
Oh, no. Yeah. Cavs are, it's theirs as long as they stay healthy.
And do we both think the Celtics are going to finish second?
Second or third. I wouldn't be surprised if the Raptors finish second. I
Same.
Think, yeah.
But if you're going to pick between the two?
I'll go Celtics too. Celtics too.
Okay. And then, yeah, and I'd have the Raptors on the same tier, but I think they're slightly behind. And then who do you have fourth? I think that's a wide open race. Do you think the Pistons can get into that?
Yeah. I've said this on so many podcasts. The Eastern Conference is weird, man. Like, there are so many strange teams. It's like Indiana just loaded up with like pretty good players. And the Knicks got Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, which would have been awesome like 5 years ago. And who else? Like, there's just some weird, weird teams out there that are, I guess, like, you could. And then the Bulls with Rondo, Wade, Jimmy Butler, like, just some bizarre teams out there. And I think some of those teams have upside, even though it's like weird upside. Pistons, I think they'll be right there for number four seed. I think they're definitely a playoff team, and if things go right for them, if they get development in the right places. Let's say Reggie Jackson, like you said, becomes more consistent. And all of a sudden, yeah, four seed isn't out of the question at all.
See, I would pick them fourth right now. I think they're going to get fourth, but I also don't think they're a lock to make the playoffs, just because, like you said,
there are so many weird teams, high variance, right, weird teams.
Right. The difference between fourth and tenth, I don't think, is very large. And it would stink to be ninth or tenth and be out of the playoffs for whoever that's going to be, when you might not be that far off. But
yeah, the Hawks are another weird team, yeah, too, with Dwight Howard. Like, what are they going to look like?
The Hornets, who are trying to piece it together without Jeremy Lin and Courtney Lee and get MKG back. The Wizards, who looked pretty good down the stretch with Markieff Morris last year, and then very weirdly adding Jan Mahinmi. The Magic with Serge Ibaka.
Another bizarre team. That's the one I forgot.
the Bucks with Giannis at point guard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they're in the Nets and 76ers, who I think are the only ones who don't really fit at all into that conversation. They're just going to be bad.
Yeah, the Celtics fans love thinking about the Nets.
Well, so on that high note, who do you see in a post-LeBron decline world as the biggest threat to the Celtics in the Eastern Conference?
Ooh, post-LeBron decline. That's a good question. I'll go that. That would probably make the Raptors like Lowry decline as well.
Yeah.
So I'll probably rule them out unless they make like some unforeseen move that I don't know about. The Pacers could be okay, I guess. Although they love to be mediocre, and I say the Pacers just because Paul George might be. After LeBron, he might be the best player in the Eastern Conference. Is that right? I'm not sure that's right, but I'm not sure it's wrong either.
By then it might be Kyrie.
Yeah, true. Who else? Yeah.
I haven't said either of the two teams that I
would put into. I'm just like going through in my head which team. I think the Bucks have really high upside. I think... The
Giannis
Wizards
might Giannis might be the best at that point.
And yeah, true. And Jabari, I think Jabari's season was kind of slept on a little bit last year. If he can extend it to three, and I don't know why he can't shoot threes. Like his stroke looks good. Mm-hmm. He was a 3-point shooter in college. Makes no sense. He hasn't shot threes yet. But he hasn't shot them badly,
which is something.
He just hasn't shot them at all.
Yeah.
If he was on the Celtics, they'd have him launching like 5 threes a game, whether he could shoot or not, just to try to stretch him. I think Washington has upside with a new coach. The Pistons are definitely there though. Who else?
So yeah, Pistons Bucks, are one of my two. Like I think it could be a lot because
Bucks, Pistons.
You're getting there. You're getting there. You're not there yet. Keep going down the standings.
Heat.
Keep going.
Not Heat. Definitely not Heat. Although I like Justice Winslow. Whiteside's intriguing. Sure. Philly.
There
too.
You go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Philly, definitely. See, I didn't even think about Philly.
Right. They're so irrelevant.
Philly's been a laughing stock for so long. But yes. Definitely, yeah. Philly, I mean, not like a couple years, but maybe a couple years after that, they could be the best team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. And it's going to depend a lot on when LeBron declines. And when that happens, but yeah, I will not be surprised if the next big group of Eastern Conference contenders post LeBron decline are the Celtics, Pistons, and 76ers.
And what about the Knicks? What like Porzingis?
Just because Porzingis is that
laugh,
good.
But Porzingis is a stud.
Yes,
and like they should trade Carmelo. To me, you trade Carmelo, get young pieces in there, build around Porzingis, well, and if they go. Yeah, maybe.
I mean, now that you've signed Noah and Courtney Lee, like, isn't it too late? Like, you got to trade them all now? Like
that Noah signing might have been the worst of the summer. He's done, man.
It might be.
His knees are shot.
Evan Turner wasn't great. Mozgov wasn't great. Like, there are some contenders, but that's definitely one.
Yeah, just a bad signing. Some teams are just make some weird decisions.
And that's the big reason I would not say the Knicks. Yes, you got Porzingis, but like,
yeah.
Is there any confidence that they're, even once the Melo era runs out, that they're going to do it right after that?
No. Yeah. No confidence whatsoever. And that Noah contract might be untradeable, even in this day and age. Like, not untradeable. Every contract is tradable, but that is a bad, bad deal.
The one that proved that to me was, I can't remember if it was Gilbert Arenas or Rashard Lewis, which seemed more untradeable. And then when they were traded for each other, right? Yeah, the Magic and Wizards like, there's always a tradable deal.
Always. Oh, I can remember a couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago in the Celtics locker room. Someone was like, man, Gilbert Arenas is still getting paid. And then they were talking about how he had sharks in his house, like a shark tank. I think he has a shark tank, yeah. Gilbert Arenas Shark Tank. We've gone to a good place now. We have talked about Gigi Datome. Now we've got Gilbert, little Rashard Lewis reference.
We can't top this. We've just got to stop here.
I think this is a good place, man. I do want to talk one before we go though. How entertaining is Stan Van Gundy?
Oh, he's great. He's great. He's gotten to the point where he'll just say whatever is on his mind. He'll say what he feels. Amazingly honest, but in a, such a respectful way. There's not many who can blend that line of just saying how they feel without, so like a coach, without making it sound like he's throwing his players under the bus. Because he'll be like honest about himself. He'll be like, no, I screwed this up. I'm doing this wrong. I need to be better at this. And I think he's got to be a dream coach for players, much in the same way the guy in Boston is.
You think he's a dream coach for players? Stan Van Gundy.
Yeah, like. I think he's really developed. He's not that this grading guy necessarily all the time anymore.
Okay.
He still might have shades of that, but he's going to be honest with you. He's going to put you in position to succeed. And I'll tell you what matters more than him being a little grading. Now that he has personnel control, he pays guys. He pays the guys he wants. He's not stingy with it. Like, look at Reggie Jackson. The Pistons said, we think you're our starting point guard. We're going to pay you like a starting point guard, even if the market doesn't necessarily bear that out in your restricted free agency. Like, they target the guys they want and they pay them, and that makes him even more of a player's coach. You can put up with a lot if the guy's willing to pay you.
And also if he cares, and you can tell Stan Van Gundy cares. Like Popovich will get on a guy's ass, but all those guys know that he cares about them as people. And I think Van Gundy's the same way. Like, he loves that team. And it's his team. Like, he's built the team. And I agree. Having control of personnel and everything, I think that does add another layer to it.
And it's not just that they care, although that is a big part of it. And it's the same thing with Popovich. And it's true of Stevens when he wants to get on a guy.
Oh, yeah.
They have proven that they are going to help you in the long run. That if you listen to them, that if you go through whatever, what you might think in the moment is BS that they're putting you through, it's going to pay off. It's going to make you a better player. It's going to get you more playing time. It's going to get you more money. Like, when a coach who has no track record or a bad track record yells at you, you can think like, well, what is this accomplishing? Like, where am I? This isn't getting me anywhere. What have you done? And that's not the case for coaches like Van Gundy and Stevens and Popovich.
Yeah. We've made it through this whole podcast without talking at all, I think, about Andre Drummond. So I'm sorry, Andre Drummond, man. I'm sorry. I got respect for you, Andre.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very nice player, but he just, so, you know, he's just slowly developing. It's not necessarily the most intriguing thing. He hasn't made a huge leap because he came into the league way better than everybody thought. He hasn't necessarily backtracked. He's just slowly getting a little better. He's still young, and he's very good.
Yeah, and he's a beast, man. That dude is as athletic as any big man.
Hey, maybe in a couple of years when his new contract extension is running out, if the Pistons haven't had the type of success that I think they will, maybe that's a guy for the Celtics to trade for with what Ooh. Could be a very young team if they haven't found their star by then and are just trying to build up some of these draft picks.
Revving up the trade rumors. Here we are. All right, man. Thanks for having me on this podcast. Thanks for doing the crossover podcast. If you want to find us, Locked On Celtics, go to Audio Boom, Stitcher, iTunes, whatever else. Search for Locked On Celtics. Subscribe. Rate us. Do the same thing for Locked On Pistons. Dan does a great job. Dan has always done a great job. He used to be in Boston covering games there. No longer. I miss you, man. And so, yeah, follow him, Locked On Pistons. Subscribe to him. Give him definitely 5-star ratings. And we'll be back with another crossover podcast soon. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you listening.
Jay, always a pleasure.